But the Ten Commandments, of course, you know what they are. I want to give an introduction to the concept. What are they all about overall? And so let's start with this historical context. If you go back, Exodus, of course, we're studying, but the book right before Exodus is Genesis. And God was the creator. Okay, so he started out creating the entire universe, making mankind as his highest creation. And then he chose a people, also in Genesis, Abraham. And he said he was going to make a nation out of him and have a covenant relationship. Covenant is one that cannot be broken. God cannot lie. So he will never break that relationship. A covenant relationship. And show off this nation to the world and show them how a nation should serve their God. Then in Exodus, we come along, and you know that story. God in Egypt, he holds history in his hands. I love that. He shows himself to Israel, not as this heavenly spiritual substance or an impersonal source of energy, but as one who shows himself to us, to mankind, in his might and power over every inch of creation. Right? The water, the sky, daylight, bugs, frogs, even life and death itself. It was a show of his power. Well, now God's ready to keep his promise. I'm going to make a nation of you. And he's going to put it in writing. And that's what we do, right? We write things down. When it's something legal, you always have to have it written down if it's something legal and signed and all that. So he's going to give the law. Because he desires this continual personal relationship with his people. The laws of God are given by God so we can relate to God and be a continual recipient of his love. God has given it so that we may enjoy continued fellowship with him and be blessed by the abundant fruits of the land and the life that he gives us to enjoy. The law was set forth the requirements of the covenant. Therefore, it does not reflect the wrath or the hardness of God, but his love. He spelled it out for us. We're going to look for a few minutes, and we're not going to do much in Exodus today, but Psalm 111, verses actually 4 through 9, it says, he has caused his wonderful works. This is going to recount the whole covenant and the whole creation. He has caused his wonderful works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and merciful. That's who God is. He provides food for those who fear him. Now, isn't it interesting? This was written by David, but didn't he just provide manna for them in the desert? He is ever mindful of his covenant. He knows what he promises, and God cannot break a promise. He has shown his people the power of his works in giving them the heritage of the nations. The works of his hands are faithful and just. All his precepts are trustworthy. They are established forever and ever. How often? How long? Till the end of the earth? No, forever and ever, to be performed with faithfulness and uprightness. He said he's going to do it, he's going to do it. So look out, because you know he's going to do some things here as we move from one era to another era in these end times. He sent redemption to his people. He has commanded his covenant forever. Forever. Get that idea. When God made you a promise, he will never break it. We might, but even when we do, he doesn't let go of us. I love an old song that I used to hear that it was about Peter in the boat. And the chorus to the song was, you know, that even when Peter doubted him, Jesus didn't let go of his hand. And I've always remembered that because I used to be so fearful when I would blow it that God would let go of me, that he was finished with me, that I'd done the unpardonable. And that is a lie from the enemy, because he will never let go of our hands. Never, ever, ever. So the Ten Commandments, the law, it enables us to present ourselves holy before a holy God. Now, we're going to look at, well, not exactly piece by piece. Next week, we'll look at each of the ten. But we are going to, there are more than 10 commandments, and we'll talk about that next week. These are just the principles, what's called the moral law. There was a ceremonial law, and we'll talk about that in a minute, that Jesus fulfilled that one. That one's done. The moral law never gets fulfilled. It's required forever and ever. But he wants us to be holy because he is a holy God, and he wants us to be in fellowship with him all the time. Not when we get to heaven one day, all the time. I have a question for you. Would you consider the following advice to be applicable today? While a loving heart maintains a family, a hateful heart destroys a family. Is that true? I love this one. Never make a big decision while drinking beer. Is that true? Okay. This advice is not from the Bible. It dates over 4,000 years ago to a tablet discovered in the Middle East, written by some Sumerian king called Shurupak. The Ten Commandments aren't even quite that old, but are they still relevant to today's life? You bet they are. You bet they are. Mark Twain told the story about a man in the 1900s who had memorized the Ten Commandments, and he told Mr. Twain that his ambition was to go to the Holy Land and stand on Mount Sinai and recite them loudly, all 10 of them. And Mr. Twain replied to him, "Have you ever thought about just staying home and keeping them?" Is that good? It's like, the Ten Commandments are everywhere in the news today. Can they be posted? Should they be removed from public venues? They have been removed from a lot of public venues. Personally, I don't believe it's detrimental to post the Ten Commandments at all. They're not a violation of any religion. Do you ever think about, except maybe atheism? They're not, every religion will agree, because it's based on our respect toward God and our respect towards others, which is what the Bible says, love God and love others. They do not disagree with any religion, again, except for atheism. But I think we've sought to silence any mention of God and his precepts, and to see that it's harming our society. If you haven't seen that, oh my goodness, I see that. We're living maybe in the midst of it here in California. And you only need to look to history to see that it's going to bring a collapse to our nation if we can't turn this around. I can't turn it around, but I can do my part to show Jesus every place I go and try to make a difference in the life of one person who doesn't know him or won't follow him. Billy Graham said several years ago before he died, if God doesn't judge America soon, he'll have to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah. That was scary for Mr. Graham to say that. 4 weeks from today, we're going to celebrate Independence Day. We are, or we were, a nation of free people. And what's interesting is that our nation's founders realized the importance of basing that freedom upon the same set of laws that God gave Moses on Mount Sinai. I meant to download some pictures. I was blessed to go to Washington, D.C. on a school tour about 10 years ago, but I didn't right-handed. I was much slower on the computer typing up these pages and all that, but you can Google it and find out how just about every place you go in Washington, D.C., you're going to find scripture written on just about every famous building that you see, including the Capitol building, where the Supreme Court meets, the court that determines our laws. As you walk up the steps to the Capitol building, you can see near the top of the building a row of statues that represent the world's greatest lawgivers. And each of those statues is facing one statue in the middle. Any idea who that middle statue might be? It's Moses, actually. Not Jesus. It's Moses holding the Ten Commandments. All laws pointed to Moses and the Ten Commandments. As you go inside the Supreme Court, there are two huge oak doors. And engraved on the lower portion of each door, guess what you see? The tablets representing the Ten Commandments, right? And if you sit inside the courtroom, once in a while, they don't show it anymore, really. Once in a while, you used to see it. You could see on the wall right above where the court judges sit a display of the Ten Commandments. Now, why would they design the Supreme Court in this way, our founding fathers? Because as a nation of free people, our leaders intended to build our freedom upon God's laws that were given at Mount Sinai. They knew it was the only way to succeed. When Israel obeys God, she prospers. When America obeyed God, we prosper. When we turn away from God, oh, please look at the judges and the kings, and the doom will follow. And as a grandparent, that breaks my heart. But there's not much I can do about it except live everything I can for Jesus. We might not be able to hang the Ten Commandments in our halls, but they should live and abide inside our hearts. The more important issue is whether we're fulfilling the law by loving God and loving others. If America would get back to these 10 simple commandments, I think we could solve a lot of our problems in society. Abortion, suicide, crime, violence, the deficit even, the welfare system. In principle, all these issues are addressed in the Ten Commandments, in principle. Listen to this. According to the Gallup poll organization, 80% of Americans claim to believe in the Ten Commandments, but over half of those can't name five of them. Jay Leno, back in the dark ages, I remember on The Tonight Show when he was hosting it, he once asked his audience to name one of the Ten Commandments. Not one person responded. Finally, somebody raised their hand and asked, God helps those who help themselves? No, that's not one of the Ten Commandments. Not one person in an audience of 300. If you don't know them, I guarantee you won't do them. There's no reason to. Gallup says they find very little difference in ethical behavior. This breaks my heart, guys, between churchgoers and non-churchgoers. Very little difference in ethical behavior. They insist that according to the research, the levels of lying, cheating, and stealing are remarkably similar in both groups. Where have we fallen away from this foundation? We're going to talk, well, are they relevant today? But as we prepare our exodus from this era into the era of the end times, God has said there would be a lot who would fall away. And I think we're seeing this, and it breaks my heart. Whole denominations have said the commands aren't relevant anymore. I will tell you, they're wrong. They're wrong. Okay? I want you to know that these commandments don't represent spiritually mature behavior. Did you hear me? They do not represent spiritually mature behavior. They are the basic behavior guidelines from where you start building spiritual maturity. Do you see the difference? They don't show how spiritual you are. It's applying them that makes you spiritual. The commandments are trying to form character, not create external rules. That's why we teach them to the kids. And so I got a challenge for you this week. Kids or no kids, memorize them this week if you don't know them. Call somebody. Get an accountability partner. Call somebody and say, okay, by Friday, I'm going to say the Ten Commandments to you. Okay? Because do you think they're important for me? These were given to adults. They weren't given to children in the desert. They were given to adults. Said, adults, this is the way you're supposed to behave. Yes, we should teach them to kids. I want my kids, I want my grandkids to know God's word and to form every thought they had. That's not possible this side of heaven, but that was my heart. So let's look at what was God's purpose behind giving the Ten Commandments. I'm going to look at some scriptures and set a basis for why the Ten Commandments and what was God doing. But let's answer the question first by looking at what the law was not designed to do. There are two big misconceptions. There's lots about the Ten Commandments, about the law overall. And we'll get into the law, the Ten Commandments. There's something like 613 rules that they had to follow. But there were the Ten Commandments that sort of governed all of the behavior toward God and toward others. But there are two major ones about the law that I hope we can end right here. The first one, the law was not designed to bring you into relationship with God. It was never designed to do that. Remember, Israel was already in relationship with God. God had made a covenant with Abraham hundreds of years earlier, and his descendants. God had just delivered them from Egypt as a direct result. And do you remember in chapter 19, God just reaffirmed that Israel was his chosen people. Look at the opening words of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20. verses 1 and 2, and God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God. The Ten Commandments are not designed to bring you into relationship with God. Israel was already in relationship with God when he gave them the Ten Commandments. And then the second thing is, and this is what I think America struggles with this so badly, the law was not designed to serve as some type of entrance exam to get into heaven. This is probably, to me, the biggest misconception of all about the Ten Commandments, that they're the measuring stick for why God should let you in. Well, I've tried to live a good life, you know, I mean, keeping the top ten kind of thing. That has nothing to do with it. Let me just ask. If you've ever lied, would you raise your hand? Okay. If you've ever stolen anything, would you raise your hand? Okay. Oh, well, there's 2 out of 10. We're at 20%, and I think it was about 100% of us. We're at 20%, perhaps. We could go down through some more. But do you see? Do you see? If it was measured to get to heaven, God says you cannot sin and get into heaven. If it was the measurement, we would all be forsaken. I thank God it's not the measurement, okay? So if that's not what the Ten Commandments are all about, then what is the purpose of the law? Well, I'm going to give you 4 important purposes, okay? Number one, the Ten Commandments teach us about God. First purpose is to learn about God. The most significant thing about the Ten Commandments is God. The first thing he does is announce who he is. In Exodus 22, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I mean, first of all, we'll read this word for word next week. He's talking to the whole nation from the mountaintop. They're hearing voices like thunder. Now, in our culture today, you might be committed for something like that. But this was the real God, and they knew he was the real God. And we'll talk about their fear of like, you go talk to him, Moses, because this is too scary for us. But he told them who he was. Each of the Ten Commandments is a revelation about and an insight into God's character. Think about this. What kind of an amazing person would tell you, make sure you take a day off each week to take care of yourself? Really? This is not somebody that wants to hurt me. In fact, how many of us hurt ourselves because we don't do it? But that's next week's. Okay? But this is a God who cares for his people and knows how to care for his people. What kind of an amazing person would say, respect your own property and everyone else's? It'll be important in your life. Only a God who values human life and cares about his people. The 10 things we learn about God that the Ten Commandments paint. I'm going to go through 10 of them. If you want to take notes, you go for it. Because there's 10 commandments, and I kind of thought, well, this is pretty cool. The first one, the things you learn about God, he's greater than any idea about God that ever came up in the world. No other notion, no other, and that's a little g there. He, capital H-E, is greater than any other idea or notion. He said it himself. He's either a liar or he is who he says he is. And I got to tell you, I wondered that sometimes. Jesus, I thought the same thing about Jesus too. Jesus said he was God. And I'm like, well, he's either a liar. And you know, there's a book, Liar, Lord, or Lunatic. That's right. He's crazy. You know, today, if somebody runs around saying they're God, we'll probably put him in a straitjacket, you know? Or they're lying, or he really is who he says he is. And that's what the Israelites had to look. They'd seen the evidence, eyeball to eyeball. They walked through the Red Sea. So he's alive. I think that was a cool one. Number two, he is alive. He has a voice. He is not a dead piece of carved wood or stone. No other nation's gods talk to the entire nation from a mountain. I wish God would do that today. It would scare the heebie-jeebies into a bunch of people. But today we'd probably say, oh, they're aliens from outer space. I mean, look for the rapture. I'm telling you as a science teacher, this whole thing recently about all this aliens coming back up, could you not explain the rapture by saying aliens came and kidnapped them and they'll steal the thunder away from God? Satan will try to. This is what was predicted in the Bible. No, this is alien abduction. Okay? Would not surprise me. But he is alive. He's not dead. He's not a carved piece of wood. He's not a stone. He's not like any other god any nation has ever known. The third thing, he is worthy of respect and honor. Worthy enough to require it, guys, to require it. And we see, I've already mentioned, he loves his children, right? To give us creation that is mind-blowing. To give us food. I don't know about you, but I've had some food recently, and I do thank you so much for you guys who brought lunch, brought dinner. It's awesome, and I've had some really good food, and I've really appreciated it, because doing things with one hand, I've learned, you're a little limited. Try tying shoes with one hand. No, don't try to do that, okay? But he gives us these things. Have you ever gone to Colorado? And I know Pastor Bill and April and Emily are out there exploring the country. And I know some of our families have just come back from across the country. Some of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. I love even going up here to Mount Baldy. Because when you get looking out here, all I see when I look out are things that man created. The concrete, the cars, the streets, the stoplights. But when I get to the mountains, all I see is God's creation. So it changes my focus from man-made. And this, he's given us this creation. In fact, it's mind-blowing. As a science teacher, you go to the Grand Canyon or to Bryce Canyon National Park or Zion. God created that out of the devastation of the flood. Only God can take an absolute mess like that and turn it into a work of art that would last for the rest of the length of the earth. Okay, so God loves his children. Number five, he values family structure. He designed it to be a picture of love and security and acceptance. It doesn't say it's going to be perfect. I promise you, because we're human, it's not going to be perfect. But it's worth fighting for, and it's worth staying for. Number seven, he values commitment. Oh, he values human life. I didn't mention that. He values human life. Number six, each person is made in his image. We have no right to take someone's life, whether they have a name yet or not, whether they're able to breathe on their own or not. We have no right, because each human is created in God's image, and he said, don't do it. He values commitment and fidelity and faithfulness, especially in the marriage covenant. He established the marriage covenant on purpose. Do you see where our culture is really walking away from God? And I think a faster pace than perhaps we have ever, maybe. He values, and I like this one, he values hard work and personal property. Not theft and bribery, you know, but, and I thought, you know, if God didn't give us that rule, don't steal, what would stop anybody? I mean, my parents would have, you know, tanned our hides, to say an Indiana term, they found out we stole things, okay? But I don't know that we weren't a Christian family. I don't know where that came from, but why not? God's saying it's not okay for you to take somebody else's stuff. How do you get stuff if you don't take it? You work for it. Imagine that, okay? He values that. He values the truth. And I like to say, even if it hurts to tell it. He values the truth. As a teacher, one of the hardest things for a student is to tell the truth when they think they're going to get a bad grade or going to get in trouble. It is so hard. Every time a student of mine says, yes, I did it, I didn't, I hit him, I whatever, I took it, and I said, you know what, I'm not going to punish you for that, because that takes so much courage to tell the truth. And, you know, I've had students come back and say, wow, I changed when you, it's grace. It's all about grace. That's what God does for us. Oh, I know there needs to be consequences, especially for the hard-hearted ones that go, whew, I got out of it that time. Let me try that again when no one's looking. And I've been there too. As a teacher, I've seen that too. But he values the truth, even if it hurts our hearts and our reputation, our pride, he values it. He will reward it. And then lastly, he gives exactly to each what we need. And it's not the same from person to person. And we'll get into the do not covet. He knows what I need. And I used to, as a kid, I used to say, God's not fair. Because, you know, other people had this awesome house they were raised in. And we struggled. We struggled with food. We struggled with abuse, with alcohol. And I'm like, that's not fair. And you know what? I'm just going to tell you what I've learned. God is not fair. We have a warped idea of what that fair means. We treat everybody the same. And that doesn't work. If you have kids, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because personalities change. God does not give us all the same thing. And it's on purpose because he knows some of us can handle things and some of us can't. And I love him for that. I think sometimes I know more than he does or better than he does. But every time he's proved me wrong when I thought he should do things my way. He gives us what we want. He's loving, but it's not about being fair, and everybody gets the same thing. Okay, so the Ten Commandments teach us a lot about God. The next thing, it teaches us about ourselves. And this one, you know, you might want to put your steel toes on, because each commandment will give you insight into your own character. What kind of a creation in God's image needs to be told, don't lie? Don't exaggerate. Don't be selfish. Why do we even need to be told that? Because we were born with original sin after Adam and Eve. And that's the way we migrate toward. Why do we have to be told to honor your parents? Why wouldn't you want to? They pay the bills. Sometimes long after they should be paying the bills. But they pay the bill. Why would you not want to honor your parents? Why would you want to take the life of another human being? How would you live in fear if constantly, we didn't have a law that says you can't murder somebody, you can't get mad. It's okay if you get mad and hit them, just don't do it on purpose. That's not okay either, is it? How would you feel as a culture? It's so much about ourselves. Why do I have to be told don't hurt somebody else? I wish I didn't have to be told don't hurt somebody else. But I need that. Each command reveals as much about us as it reveals about God. On Tuesday this week, when I sat in for 4 hours in an emergency room with my hand in traction up high and they're pulling my fingers out to, reset that. I meditated on the idea of the Ten Commandments being like the X-ray machine. They brought the X-ray machine in And I even got to see the two breaks that were there and how it was out of place now. And my science brain is going, oh, that's really cool, you know. But I wasn't feeling any pain, thankfully, at that time. But I kind of thought, wow, the Ten Commandments are like the X-ray machine. They show cataclysmic stuff on the inside sometimes. My X-ray did not look like, and when I taught anatomy, it did not look like the hand structure that I had the kids label on their quiz. Because mine was out like that, you know, or to the side. The cataclysmic upheaval that was going on inside that we could, you could see it because my hand was bent that way. You could see it. But we didn't really know what was going on inside. And the Ten Commandments are like that too. Or maybe an MRI machine, too, if you think of it that way. They reveal what's taking place inside our bodies where we can't see. And I've learned that the Ten Commandments teach us about our good parts and our bad parts, too. The X-ray machine, they X-rayed my elbow because I guess it's normal that if you broke a bone down here at the wrist, you might break it up at the elbow, too. And they X-rayed it, and he said, oh, your shoulder's fine. You don't need any repair there at all. Like, yes, so it showed the good stuff, too. I wouldn't want him trying to set my shoulder when nothing was wrong with it, right? And so it teaches us an awful lot about ourselves. Okay, the third purpose. The Ten Commandments teach us about the Lord Jesus Christ. You're like, what? That's Old Testament. He's not even mentioned in them. Well, according to the Bible, you're right. He's not there at Exodus. According to the Bible, though, Jesus kept every one of the Ten Commandments without ever breaking any of them. We're going to look at some scriptures. You might want to jot down 2 Corinthians 5:21. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Wow. Well, there's two more here. Hebrews 4:15, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way just like we are, yet he did not sin. And 1 Peter 2:22, he committed no sin and no deceit was found in his mouth. So many people say, I've heard good pastors say, we don't have to follow the Ten Commandments now because we don't have to keep them because Jesus is the New Testament. That's Old Testament. Is that true? Well, what did Jesus say? In fact, I've got next week we're going to talk about. I actually went through and go, well, did Jesus mention all 10 commandments? You'll either have to find out next, come back next week to find out, or dig in there and find out yourself. Okay? But here's what he said in Matthew 5:17. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. In other words, Jesus said, I'm going to show you how to live this life on earth. And he did it perfectly. Wow. He lived this. He was the sinless sacrifice, the spotless lamb. Why can we be saved from our guilt and shame? Because of him. It required in the Old Testament, I mentioned earlier, and we'll look at that, the ceremonial law was ended with Jesus. No reason for a temple anymore. We are the temple of the Holy Spirit. He is living inside you. Do not sacrifice a cow in your kitchen sink and think you're offering it to God. It does no good. We don't need, the final sacrifice was paid. It does no good to do that. The ceremonial law. Now, the moral law, which is what the Ten Commandments are, they never ended. They never ended. In fact, people like to pick and choose. I'm like, well, okay, so you say it doesn't, so it's okay to go out and kill people? It's okay to be unfaithful to your spouse? It's okay to lie and cheat, steal? And of course they say no, but they'll pick and choose. And we'll talk about that next week, because there's a good one. I got to tell you, there's one that stumps me sometimes still. I've been thinking about it, praying about it for years. I'm like, God, I don't quite understand this. So, you know, you can ask me later or come back next week and I'll tell you what it is. But why have we been saved from our guilt and shame? Because Jesus never committed adultery. He never took God's name in vain. He followed God's prescribed rhythms of rest, and he always honored his parents. Jesus never murdered. He never hated. He never threw temper tantrums. Because Jesus never committed adultery or lust or had lingering or wandering eyes, guys. Because Jesus never stole or cheated or cut corners in the carpentry shop. He never lied or exaggerated. He never coveted neighbor's house, job, spouse, jet ski, bass boat, new truck, children, bank balances, retirement accounts, or investments. This is what made his sacrifice on the cross an acceptable payment for our sin. He exchanged his active obedience for our active and sometimes passive disobedience, offering us perfect righteousness that we could never pay for or earn, and taking upon himself the judgment of God's wrath. And then that resurrection 3 days later, that was just God's way of saying, I got the payment, guys. You're in. Okay. Love that aspect. I said last week, and I say it over, this is controlling my life. Believe God. Trust in God. And then obey him. Too many people, oh yeah, I believe the Ten Commandments. But they don't really trust that has anything to do with life today. And obey them? Oh, okay, I'm not pretty good. 9 out of 10's not bad. 9.5 maybe? Okay. 5%, 95% truth is still 100% lie. Okay. And number four, the Ten Commandments teach us our duty, our human duty. Love God and love others. That's our duty. When we fulfill our God-given duty, we experience positive emotions, don't we? Positive psychological functioning, you're at peace. I am. Positive social functioning, I'm not fighting with people most of the time, okay, right? And we live with this within this optimal range of human functioning. It's a prerequisite to overall well-being to do what God said to do. The writer of Psalm chapter 1 says it this way. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law once a week at church. No, day and night. First thing every morning. No, day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. Whatever they do, long term, it's a promise. I can't, short term, I know it falls apart. What's this? I'm not scared. I know it all fits in no matter what. God's got a plan. I don't think he did this by any means. The devil might have grabbed a hold of my sneaker when I went over that little fence. But he's got a plan for this. And I'm just going, okay, I'll just keep going. Just keep going. Just keep going. So, but he says, not so the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Well, we're not finished yet there through chapter verse 6. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment. God's not even going to allow them to get there, okay? Nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous. Think about that. Do things God's way. See, God doesn't leave us. He watches over the ways of the unrighteous too. Okay? We leave God when we sin. We walk away. We break. We begin to build the wall between me and God. I don't want to. Do you ever just sin and go running to God and go, oh, God, let me tell you what I did today. No, it's like, oh, well, I'll just get busy. I'll just do something else. Or maybe he didn't notice. Okay? For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. He knows that way too. And he's told us. Don't do that to yourself. Don't do that to your family, your friends, your relationships. But we do it anyway, don't we? Over and over, over and over and over, the Bible tells us that the Ten Commandments are the way of life, the way of blessing, and the way of peace. Read Psalm 119 this week. It talks about God's precepts, commands, rules, his orders. 176 verses, and we found 176 times commands, rules, and verses and precepts are mentioned in there. Okay. Wow, one for every verse. Find out what it says about God's law. There's lots of cool blessings, and there's lots of consequences to breaking it too. The way of blessing, the way of peace are the ones that I like. John says in his letter, 1 John, he encourages us to remember God's commands are not burdensome. Really not hard to keep. It's our attitude that becomes hard. I don't want to do it and you can't make me. I want control. He won't make me and he won't make you. But there'll be consequences. Remember the Jonah that we talked about last week? You can't make me. Nope, you can run. But there's big fish out there in those seas. Okay, so big bears up there in the mountains. Think of the Ten Commandments like traffic laws. Except for a few anarchists that run around here in Southern California, most would agree that the world is a safer place, don't you think, with traffic laws? Aren't you glad that there's some semblance of law and order? I am. I really appreciate that for the most part, my neighbors obey the law. It makes life nicer. People stop and go. You don't have to slow down at a green light. You know, yellow means you should, but at a green, you don't have to because why? You trust that the people on the other side are going to obey their red light. I love living in a society like that. People slow down when driving by schools. Well, kind of noticed recently. They don't always, that's for sure. People stop for school buses. We still do that, okay? Each one is meant for us. Each law is meant for us to take care of ourselves and other people. God's law is no different, guys. It's no different. Each one is meant for us, for God to help take care of ourselves. And why do we rebel against that? Now, in no way do the Ten Commandments save us. If you haven't heard that, I will tell you that only Jesus can do that. And salvation is never a reward for obedience. It's actually backwards. We obey because he loved us. We obey because he saved us. Out of respect, out of adoration, we obey. You don't obey to see what you can get from God. It doesn't work that way. And it teaches us about God. It teaches us about ourselves and about the Lord and about our duty as a human being. I don't know if you noticed that, but it spells out G-O-L-D, okay? The law is designed to be as good as gold, okay? It just is. You want gold? I'd kind of like gold. I've always thought it'd be fun to find gold nuggets. I like to watch once in a while that Yukon Gold show on PBS where they're out trying to find all this gold. And it would just be kind of fun. Gold is precious. Okay. Well, that's what God's law is. It's about God. It's about ourselves. It's about the Lord Jesus. And it's about our duty as a human being. Imagine our lives, our world, our country, our jobs, our kids, our faith. How it would be different if we, with God's help, built our lives around these truths. Remember, Psalm 1 said, "Blessed is the one whose delight is in the law of the Lord and who meditates on this law day and night." Do you want to be blessed by God? Then you know what you need to do day and night this week. Right? Next week, we're going to go into, I call them God's top 10. We're going to actually go through the first ones, our focus is on God. The last ones are focused on other people. And there's a bridge there, honor your parents. Well, fascinating when I saw that this last couple of weeks, that's the bridge between how we honor God and how we honor people in this world is how we grow up honoring our parents. And we could spend weeks on that, but I won't, I promise. As we close, how about we just pray, and worship team, you want to come on up, and we will close out this morning. Father.